Well, back in Mark chapter 3 this evening, if you want a text, if you want one verse that this is going to be based on, I think I'd pick, I'll go for two verses rather than one, if that's okay. Verses 34 and 35 of Mark chapter 3, where the Lord Jesus says, "Here are my mother and my brothers, for whoever does the will of God is my brother and my sister and mother." I think it was last time I was with you several weeks ago that I spoke from Romans 8 on the fact that Christians are adopted, that we're adopted into the family of God. And really, tonight is, I suppose, in some ways a follow-on from that. When I spoke about adoption, there are many blessings that come to us from being adopted, and one of them that we can focus on this evening is that it brings us into the family of God. In our house, we've come through phases of playing a particular game an awful lot. I remember we went through a period of several months where all we seemed to play was Happy Families. So it's this game where you've got the mum and the dad, and the master and the miss in the family, and you have to collect the sets. And when you've got all four, you've got yourself a happy family. In the verses we're focusing on, really we're looking at verse 31 to 35, where Jesus talks about his family. And he talks about two families he has. He's speaking to his flesh and blood family, if we can use that language. But he's also making the point that he has a second, completely separate family as well. And he says some things that would have been really quite shocking to his own family. So his mum and his brothers are out there in verse 31. They've arrived and they're looking for him. And they're told, they say to Jesus, they say, "Look, your mother and your brothers are outside seeking you." And Jesus says, "Well, who are my mother? Who are my brothers anyway?" Jesus is using this event to teach his people about family. So I want to pull out three truths that Jesus is teaching about family this evening. If you're thinking to yourself, "Well, I don't have a family, I don't have children, or you know, it's just me," that doesn't mean this isn't for you this evening. It's the lessons Jesus is teaching here are very much for all of us. The first truth Jesus is teaching is that Jesus loved his family. You may have to think, hang on a minute, Jesus loved his family? Well, what on earth is he doing here? Here they are, they've come over to see him, they're standing outside, but he doesn't go out to see them, he doesn't go and say hello. Actually, he seems to ignore them and start talking about, "Well, you know, who are my real family anyway?" I don't know about you, does this come across as a bit rude from Jesus here? It reminds me a bit of, if you cast your mind back to, maybe you weren't like this as a teenager, but if you're a teenager, remember those times when mum or dad showed up and you thought, "Oh, mum, what are you doing? You're embarrassing me in front of all my friends. Go away." It feels almost like that's what Jesus is. He's sort of like, "Look, not now, please. Leave me to it. I'm doing something else at the moment." He doesn't really seem to want to know. But is it that's going on here? It's not. And when you read the context of these verses, we start to understand what's going on. If we just explain what's going on in the whole chapter. Back in verses 1 to 6, I said that Jesus heals a man there with a withered hand. And verses 7 to 12, a crowd follows him. Verses 13 to 21, Jesus appoints apostles, disciples. And then, after that, in verse 21 is particularly important. But when his own people heard about this, they went out to lay hold of him, for they said, "He is out of his mind." Now that phrase, "his own people," reads a bit strange, doesn't it? You think, well, who are his own people? What's that talking about? It's almost certainly his own family. The translation, it could technically, it could allow for it to be, you know, it literally means those on his own side. So you could come up for an argument that it's much broader than that, it's all his disciples, but we're pretty confident, translators are confident this is his own family. And if you read the ESV translation, that's what it gives you. It says his family, when his family heard about this. So it seems very likely this is his family here. So what do they do? What do his own family members do in verse 21? When they hear about what's going on, about what Jesus is doing and saying and teaching, they go out to lay hold of him. For they said, he is out of his mind. So all of a sudden, this isn't that embarrassing scene where mum's turned up at the football match because she's so proud of how well little Johnny's doing, but Johnny doesn't want her there because he's embarrassed about how loudly she's shouting from the side of the pitch. Actually, it's not that anymore at all. That's not what's going on here. His family have turned up because they think he's out of his mind. They think he's lost the plot. And they've come to lay hold of him. Now, lay hold of him, you think, that sounds quite violent. They're going to grab him. What are they going to do to him? But all that really means is they wanted to take him and put him in protective custody. They're thinking, you know what? Jesus has become insane. He's really lost his mind here. So the motive was good. They wanted to take him and put him somewhere safe and protect him from everyone else and from himself. They've come to say, Jesus, it's time to calm down a little bit. You've got a bit ahead of yourself. You've got a bit excited. All this business about you thinking you're the Lord of the Sabbath. All this healing that is going on. You know, Jesus, it's time to calm down here a bit. That's what they've come to do. So when they come in verse 31 and they stand outside and they're calling for him, now we know why they're there. It's not simply dropping in to say hi and see how he's doing. They're coming because they think what he's doing is completely misguided. They want to look after him. They want to take him away for his own safety. So what does Jesus do when they turn up? What does he do? Well, he uses it as an opportunity to teach some important truths. Firstly, to his own family members, but also to teach something about the nature of his spiritual family. And it's the contrast here that's important. You've got his flesh and blood family who are coming, saying to him, look, Jesus, we know what's best here. We know what's really going on. We know what you need, and we're going to do it for you. I think their motive was good, but even as his own family members, they weren't putting themselves at Jesus' feet. And that's the contrast. Is that when Jesus says, here are my mothers and brothers, it's people who are sitting around him at his feet, listening to the Lord Jesus. It's important to say, I think, that being in a privileged position, I mean, Jesus' own mother, his brothers, that's a privilege, isn't it? What an honour to have been related to him in that way. But actually, Jesus is saying, bottom line is, that privilege doesn't count for anything at all. You may be my mother, you may be my brother, but now you need to come and sit at my feet too. And whatever privilege, whatever Christian privilege you may have had, it doesn't actually count for anything at all unless you're ready to come and sit at Jesus' feet too. Now, you might be thinking, okay, hang on then. How does this, you know, isn't this first point meant to be Jesus loved his family? I can't see that yet. Okay, how does Jesus prove he loved his family in this event? Here's the answer. He showed he loved them by telling them the truth. What he could have done, and what we would probably be tempted to do, is think, oh, Mum's here. Well, I'd better be polite. I'd better go and say hello. I'd better go on out and invite them in and see if they want a cup of tea. Actually, Jesus is ready to confront their faulty thinking. He's ready to say, actually, here are my mother and my brothers. See, because what he knows they need most of all is they need a clear understanding of who he is. A clear understanding of who Jesus himself is the most important thing anyone needs. And Jesus is really willing to risk upsetting them, offending them, making that relationship more difficult. He's willing to do it because he loves them. He wants them to know who he is. So here's a question for you. Do you love your family, your brother, your sister, your children, your parents? Do you love your neighbour? Do you love your work colleagues? Do you love... There are people who don't know Jesus. And if you love them, you'd be ready to speak the truth in love to them, even if they might get upset by it. Being confronted with the gospel sometimes does that. But we're called to follow Jesus. It applies as parents, doesn't it? For parents, to love your children means being ready to tell them the truth, to speak to them about what will happen one day. You know, and it's not just for parents and children, anyone who's lost. We speak to them with tears in our eyes, saying, there is an eternity. There is a heaven to be won. There is a hell for those who don't turn to the Lord Jesus. It's hard to say that. But Jesus was ready to confront, to speak the truth, because he loved them. He wanted them to know who he was. So that's the first truth Jesus is teaching this evening. He teaches the importance of speaking the truth because he loved his family. Secondly, this evening, Jesus teaches the church to be a family. That's the point he uses this event to try and teach. In these verses, Jesus is introducing a very important New Testament concept. It's something that once you start looking for it, actually it's everywhere in the New Testament. And that's that Jesus himself has a spiritual family. He says, actually, everyone who's sitting at my feet here, there may be a whole crowd of them, they may be from all sorts of backgrounds and ages and everything else, but the people around me sitting at my feet, they are my mother and my brothers. This is a picture that the New Testament uses again and again, all the way through. I can give you loads of examples. I'm not going to give you all of them. We'd be here all night. But I'll give you a few. Start with, think about how the New Testament uses the word brothers or sisters. The New Testament writers aren't using those words because it's a nice word or because they want to speak Christianese. Actually, there's an important truth behind that. They did it because they recognise you're part of a family. The family of God. 2 Corinthians 6, God says there, I will be a father to you, and you shall be my sons and daughters. And when you become sons and daughters of God, you become adopted into that family. Galatians 6, Paul says, let us do good to all, especially to those who are of the household of faith. That same phrase, that same idea, the household of faith. There's a house, and who lives there? All the people of faith. Here's an interesting one. End of Romans chapter 16, Paul has a long list of greetings that he writes to all sorts of people in the church at Rome. And here he says, greet Rufus, chosen in the Lord, and his mother and mine. Isn't that a strange way of putting it? Rufus wasn't actually his brother. They didn't actually share a mother. But when he thinks of Rufus's mother, he says, well, yes, she's your actual mother, but she's my mother in the Lord as well. I feel she's my mother too, because he's got hold of this truth about the church being a family. What does that mean for us? It means you're to see each member of your church as a family member. That's what the Lord Jesus is teaching here. And that works out in all sorts of different ways. So in 1 Timothy 5, we're told, don't rebuke an older man, but exhort him as a father. Younger men as brothers, older women as mothers, younger women as sisters. So Timothy was meant to be looking around his church, and he'd see older men there, and he'd meant to see them as father figures, and the older ladies as mothers. And he was to see the younger women as sisters, to see young men as brothers, to see it as his role to encourage them as you would a brother. He used to see the young women as sisters and to treat them with all the purity and love and care that you would your own sister. He used to see these things in terms of family relationships in his church. That's what the church is, a place full of fathers and mothers and children and grandchildren and grandparents. It's a challenge for us this evening. Do you see the children in this church as being, in a sense, your children, all the church's children? Do you see older folk, those of you who are younger, as being parents, grandparents in the Lord, caring for them in the same way you would your own grandparents? You know, think about how you'd want your grandparents to be treated. Well, that's how we look after them as well. That's the challenge, to see church life in that way, caring in all sorts of practical ways. As we do that, remember it's the example the Lord Jesus has set for us himself. Remember, if we're a member of Jesus' family, it's because he demonstrated his love for us first, in dying for us. And it's that model of sacrificial love that we're to follow as well in church life. That's one of the great blessings of Christianity. When we're adopted into the family, we do have these brothers and sisters and mothers and fathers in the Lord. Are you enjoying that great blessing? Are you aware of it? Is it something you've forgotten? Are you seeking to see the other people in your church in that way? Third truth the Lord Jesus is teaching here is that Jesus welcomes everyone into his family. Doesn't restrict entry on social status. You don't have to pay a membership fee. You don't have to have lived a good life. Jesus says in verse 35, "For whoever does the will of God is my brother and my sister and mother." I don't know if that sounds attractive to you. Maybe you're not a Christian, but that does sound rather appealing. You know, this idea of having a big, happy family where everyone looks out for each other and loves one another. Well, you can have that. That is the reality of being a part of the Lord Jesus' family. But at the same time, I'd like to give a word of caution here as well with that. This isn't something where you join just because you want to be part of that social network, just because you want to be a part of the club, if you like. How do you join? Jesus tells us it's whoever does the will of God is my brother, is my sister, and my mother. These people, this crowd, and they're sitting, listening to the Lord Jesus. And that's the only way in, is to recognise, you know, I'm not going to be my own master anymore. I can't be. In the end, it doesn't work. I'll get to the end of my life and then Jesus will be Lord of all then anyway. You can actually hear these people sitting at Jesus' feet saying, I'm going to trust him, I'm going to follow him, I'm going to live for him. As we start to draw to a close, I just want to make two points in answer to one further question. What happens when churches do these things? What happens when churches put the things we've talked about into practice? I want to tell you two things. Firstly, God's people find comfort. There are all sorts of painful things in family life. I don't know about your personal family experience. There'll be lots of different stories that could be told even here this evening, I'm sure. But for many of us, we have painful family experiences. We have people who we've lost and we miss them even now. We have people who have betrayed us, people who have let us down, who've done things we feel we really should not have done. Our family members who we just don't see anymore, and it still hurts. Got people who we've let down, people who we've pushed away, people where we've acted selfishly, and all this happens in our own families, our own flesh and blood, the people we should care for the most, you'd say. There's all sorts of pain in family life, and that pain is real. But the Lord Jesus made a special point of emphasising that the church is a source of refuge and comfort amidst the pain of normal family life. And here's when he did it. Do you remember he was hanging on the cross? And he saw his own mother, his mother who we've just read about, he saw his mother there. And he said to his mother, pointing to one of the disciples, "Woman, here is your son." And to the disciple, "Here's your mother." And that disciple took her into his home from then on. Jesus knew that his mother was about to lose a son. And that there would, for the rest of her life, that her family would feel incomplete. I know he rose again. He ascended to heaven. He knew what she was about to go through. And how does he provide comfort for her? He says you'll find comfort amongst the people of God. You'll find a son there. As much as our own family lives can sometimes hurt us and be painful and feel incomplete, you can in the family of God find comfort. Mm-hmm. You can find sons and daughters and mothers and fathers. Maybe you feel like you haven't found that yet. Maybe that's something you want, but I don't have that yet. Well, the church isn't perfect. We're a bunch of sinners at the end of the day. And we've got work to do, all of us, on that front. But the Lord Jesus still sees the church family as being a place of comfort amidst the pain of flesh and blood family life. So that's the first thing that happens when churches do these things. God's people find comfort. The second thing that happens is the world will take notice. Listen to what the Lord Jesus says in John 13. He says, "A new commandment I give to you, that you love one another. As I have loved you, that you also love one another. By this all will know that you are my disciples, if you have love for one another." When Christians in church life love one another sacrificially, the way Jesus loved his disciples, Jesus says the world will notice. It will stand up and take note. It will see. Do you know why? There are lots of people out there who sacrificially love their own families. It's not uncommon, is it, to see a mum sacrificially loving her daughter, or a son or a daughter caring in old age for a parent they love. That's good and it's right, but it's not rare, is it? We would hope and expect that thing happens a lot in our society. But when you find a group of people caring for others where they're not actually family ties there, where actually the only thing in common is the Lord Jesus Christ, that's when people will stand up and say, there must be something else going on there. I've never seen anything like that before. That they love each other simply because the Lord Jesus loves them. They're following the Lord Jesus. So where do you start? If you want to put these things into practice, and I'm going to close by saying this, where do you start? If you think, I want to do this, I want to do it better, I want to grow into this, I would suggest starting by praying. By praying for members of your church. Perhaps you go home and you pick three people in the church and you think, I'm going to pray for them. I'm going to pray for them regularly. And you know what happens? As you start to pray for people, you start to think about them. You start to be interested in their lives. You start to ask about the struggles they're going through. You start to notice things you can do to sacrificially love them. Maybe there's some people who think, if you ask me to love them sacrificially tomorrow, I don't really know what I'd do. As you start to pray, God reveals these things to us. So I think that's our prayer. Pray, Lord Jesus, will you help me to love your family as you've loved me? That's where it always goes back to. The Lord Jesus has loved us, and that's why we're to love each other. So the Lord Jesus and his family in those verses. Let's close this part of the service by singing number 373. 373, this is a hymn that talks about some of the things we've been thinking about this evening. All praise to our redeeming Lord.